Welcome to Real Paranormal Activity, the network. Entertainment you'll enjoy.
You are listening to an RPA production, where people gather. LaFosse Corporation, LLC.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the show. This is Dave Emmons with The Strange Reality. I want to tell you, first of all, I appreciate everybody that follows, and I usually put up other things like pictures of UFOs that people have on my site. And I do that because I want people to know what's really going on out there. And you know, that's what The Strange Reality is all about. It's everything that is strange. I want people to know about it. And it's not so strange, like conspiracies and things of that nature. You know, they're actually what's going on is that there's so many things that people don't know. And you start learning this thing. You open up your consciousness and you look around yourself and you say, wow, this does exist. You know, you have the powers to be and the elites that are trying to stop us from having the knowledge that we're supposed to have and know what's actually going on out there in our own spiritual health and our own emotional health. It's important and that we remain free and happy. And that's what we need to do in this country. My guest today, after that little dialogue that I think some people probably won't go along with, but that's fine. Everybody has their own opinion. That's how I approach things. And that's how I do with my guests. My guest today, I've had him on before, and he's written three books. Maybe he's working on other articles and things, but he's been quite busy with the pyramid phenomena, and everybody's interested in that. I know I am. I'd like to go to Egypt and visit the pyramids. That's one of my bucket lists, but I'm not sure if I'm going to make it now with all the chaos that's going on in the Middle East. But my buddy here, Stephen Myers, he's been there, and he'll tell us a little bit about that after I introduce him. Stephen Myers is the author of three books. His first book is titled Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid. His second book is titled The Great Pyramid Prosperity Machine. His third book is titled Pharaoh's Pump Analyzed. And that's this book he just wrote back in 2023. And he's an author, lecturer, and independent researcher. Stephen Myers has studied the Great Pyramid for over 20 years to understand how this ancient wonder of the world was built and why. We're going to get into that. His research included traveling to Egypt to conduct extensive on-site research at the Giza. I'm thinking about Yellowstone, the geyser. It's Giza Plateau. Stephen Meyer has written numerous magazine articles and given many lectures on the subject of the Great Pyramid. He compiled his research into three books, which provide comprehensive and detailed explanation of how the Great Pyramid was built and why. He has also founded a nonprofit foundation dedicated to understanding how and why the Great Pyramid was built. The mission of this book, that's his new book, I imagine, describes how the massive stones were moved from the quarries and set into place with extreme precision, using the lost technologies described in this book. The Great Pyramid was assembled effortlessly without the unworkable notion of a gigantic ramp. This book also examines modern Egyptology's unprovable explanations of how the Great Pyramid was built and offers a fresh and exciting alternative. Stephen Myers feels that the Great Pyramid is not just an irrelevant ancient structure. He contends that the Great Pyramid was built using advanced technologies which need to be redeveloped in our modern age. The most important aspect of this book is the contention that these ancient but highly advanced technologies can vastly improve your modern but very troubled world. This description may be from another edition of this product, and that's his latest book that he's got out, and that is Pharaoh's Pump, Analyzed, Examining the Research of Edward J. Kunkel. And I'm sure people have seen him on Ancient Aliens and things of that nature, Mr. Kunkel. I was talking to Stephen a while ago, and I'm an ET guy, and I have experiences, and we talked about this two or three years ago. But there's also a theory that ancient people had intelligence way back when. And they had this, these enormous, you know, books of knowledge or thinkers and people that knew how to build these pyramids long, long ago. It may not be all E.T. And I told Stephen, I said, I'd split with him on this idea that E.T.s might have done it 60,000, 200,000 years ago and started developing the knowledge for these people. But then it stretched through humankind. And then maybe the humans had the knowledge without the help of the ETs with these pyramids. We'll find out. Stephen Meyer, welcome to the show, buddy. A little bit long-winded on that one, but I just want you to explain anything else that I might have missed in your bio and tell us what you've been up to.
Well, thank you, Dave, for having me back on your show. What a what an honor to be back. So it's been, what, a year or two? We've been interviewed, but I'm on the show. I recently did a tour, led a 13-day tour to Egypt, which is marvelous. That was about a year ago before the troubles they're having right now in that part of the world. So it was a wonderful trip. We went to essentially everywhere, you know, Karnak, the Colossi of Mammon, even the High Aswan Dam. So it was a marvelous experience leading a tour like that. So that's probably the highlight of the last year, as well as my third book titled Pharaoh's Pump Analyzed. So there's been a lot going on.
Now, were you able to go into the Great Pyramid, Stephen?
We did. You can, that was part of the tour. You buy a little extra ticket and you go right in and go up the Grand Gallery and then up into the King's Chamber and all of that. And it's like being inside a machine is what a lot of people describe that ancient, very precise structure built in ancient times.
How did you feel? Some people, when they go in there, they say they just feel some kind of energy, like you said you felt. And is it maybe just, could it be an emotional high that you are on? Or is there still energy inside that pyramid, Stephen?
Well, it's certainly a pretty fascinating pile of rocks, if you want to put it that way. I felt in awe of being inside those passages and chambers. It was actually quite similar to when I toured the Hoover Dam. You can go inside the Hoover Dam. The first time I went inside was before 9/11, and you could go all through it. You could go see the big shafts turning and go through all the passages in that structure, and it was like an industrial cathedral, the Hoover Dam. And I got that same kind of a vibe when I was in the Great Pyramid. It was this massive structure that, wasn't for war, wasn't a weapon or anything like that. And it was built by, I would contend, ancient humans that were geniuses. And it was a massive construction project. So it was very fascinating to go through those passages and chambers.
How did these ancient intelligent people, I'm not denying that fact, that's actually a strong theory that's going on now, that it was very intelligent human beings that got together and did this, but they've learned that down through thousands of years. How now do you think there's another chamber in there they found in the pyramid, and they haven't really explored it yet, Stephen?
That's a good question. They've used some muon scanning technologies, and just recently, months ago, discovered a small open area, you could call it a chamber, under the large stones near the original entrance. They call them chevron stones, one of the largest stones in the Great Pyramid. And under there was a chamber, but that had never been entered since the time the Great Pyramid was built. But it sort of looked like under the rafters in an attic is what it looked like. I mean, it wasn't anything profound or symbolic. But there's also a idea that there's another larger chamber kind of near the Grand Gallery that goes up at an angle, a 26-degree angle, And there's a possibility that something is there. So even though the Great Pyramid is a building built in distant antiquity, it's certainly in the modern news quite often.
Right. I hear also the Great Sphinx. There's a chamber below. And actually, the Egyptian government has stopped all outsiders from doing any work on it. And they're doing some work. They're digging down into that chamber that they say is down there. What do you know about that one, Stephen?
Well, I know that I don't know.
the government shut that one down, I think.
But the Egyptians in charge of those ancient sites are off, and Egyptology in general is often not very forthcoming in some of their research that they're doing. So it's hard to say. You know, us regular people are often not allowed to know exactly what's going on. So it leads to, you know, conjecture and conspiracy theories, that type of thing. So it's hard to say, you know, what they know that they're not telling us.
Yeah, the powers to be like the conspiracy theories because it throws us way off. I know you heard the saying, and I've heard it quite a bit mentioned on the air, that history isn't what we think it was. It's not the history. They've been hiding a lot of things from us through ancient technologies, through wisdom, and all the way through the thousands of years. And this is why, I guess you say, these people were intelligent enough to do this themselves from the knowledge that they learned hundreds or thousands of years back, and they passed it on to each other. In doing so, the one big question I know a lot of people might have out there, Stephen, is how did these ancient intelligent people move those giant blocks?
Well, I think that they used water locks, like in the Erie Canal or like the Panama Canal, water locks and barges, and they were able to move stones effortlessly up a series of water locks to the construction site. And the first stones they set in place were the casing stones for the first level. They set those casing stones and created a square wall, if you will, and those stones are cemented together watertight, and they were able to fill that square walled in area up with water. So it was a huge pond, and they moved stones on barges systematically on a production line manner all the way up and into that pond. And they were able to move stones off of the barges and set them right into the pond. And when that pond was filled with stones, the first level of the Great Pyramid was completed. And they continued that process level by level with casing stones first, and then the interior stones level by level until the Great Pyramid was completed. We have a video series on our website that describes the whole process in detail.
Right. And you have a group, and we're going to be talking about that, an organization that worked together. And they put in their input, their intelligence, and their investigative skills into looking into the Great Pyramid. But I've always thought, you know, that the Great Pyramid was always built by ETs. But like I said, there's been a second thought about what's going on after looking at history is not what it's really is supposed to be. So I'm open to this theory, but how? If you can explain, I guess the YouTube on your website will explain it, but how did they raise that pond up to get the boats? Are you saying that the boats went into this pond as they raised the pond level and they got up?
Yes. Each level had a water lock that was on the side of the north face, if you will. So when they completed the first level, they added additional casing stones with an additional water lock, mm-hmm. and completed the process. So the stones on barges came from the Nile all the way up to the building site, up these water locks and into that pond. So the second level was completed the same way the first one. They moved the interior stones in on that second level and took the stones off the barges and set them right into the pond. So it was systematic level by level. And the way they supplied the water was that they had the descending passage and the subterranean chamber, it was a water pump, kind of like a hydraulic ram water pump. Mm-hmm. So they were able to pump water up to supply the water locks, and they were able to move the stones effortlessly.
Well, I know that the Edward J. Kunkel, you mentioned him in this book, he's been on Ancient Aliens and things of that nature. He actually describes that at one time there were water levels on the ancient Sphinx, and that you could see the water lines on that. And so back, I guess, thousands of years, I guess the pyramid age is around, 3000 BC? Is that what you think, Stephen? Or what is the age of the pyramid?
Well, the age of certainly the Great Pyramid is under scholarly debate. Egyptologists say the Great Pyramid was built about 4,500 years ago, but the age of the pyramids and the sequence of construction are all under scholarly debate. Mm-hmm. Dr. Robert Schock, his famous research about the water erosion on the Sphinx indicates that the Sphinx was built much earlier.
Right.
So that gives the possibility that the pyramids were built much earlier.
And I think there's a conspiracy, or there's some kind of a reason why the government's involved now in trying to find that room. There's a vacancy underneath the front paws of the Sphinx, and the government now has closed it down to outsiders, and they're doing the work. They're thinking that that's a hall of knowledge. There's a big room of knowledge and books and things of that nature that describes how the pyramids and the ancient Egyptians, how they worked and how intelligent they are. And maybe they can find secrets for themselves. Each government is always after secrets. UFOs, it don't matter. Pyramids, they want to find that magic, a portal or whatever. The military gets involved, the governments get involved, because they want that as either a weapon or something to modernize their own culture so they can, be higher and above other civilizations, and which is not a good idea to go after something for power. But what do you think, Stephen, that could be in that empty hall underneath the paws of the Sphinx?
Well, there's a lot of speculation that below the paws of the Sphinx is some sort of a hall of records or some depository of ancient knowledge and that type of thing. Certainly, I've never seen any photographs of anything like that, but I sure hope there is, and I hope it's been undisturbed. And I also hope that if Egyptologists or governments enter that hall, that ultimately that information will be made available to the general public. But it's hard to see. The pyramids and even the Giza Plateau gives up its secrets very slowly.
Yeah, maybe some other country may start a war with Egypt and go in there and try to get it, like they did in Iraq. There's some conspiracy theories about Iraq having some ancient secrets buried in some of their ancient sites, and actually a portal. And other governments were after that. And I don't know. That's what the conspiracies are. But I think back thousands of years ago, that was a more lush area where the water was more plentiful from the Nile River, and it come up real high, up close to the pyramids, like you said. So they used the river water to do what you're saying is to raise the level. So it was more tropical back, 3,000-4,000 years ago than what it is now. And we know how the weather can change. And then it can take a lush forest and make it into a desert with no rain after a while. Is that what you're considering also, that back then there was more water and the water level was higher, Stephen?
Well, the path of the Nile River has changed through the eons, and the area was more, certainly more of a savanna in distant antiquity. And it was even more of a wetter climate before the last ice age. Right. So weather changes, the path of the Nile changes. We think the source water for the Great Pyramid was from the ancient Lake Maurice, which is much smaller now, but in distant antiquity, it was pretty large with a higher elevation than it has now. So that lake was ultimately the source water for the Great Pyramid water pump.
Could you tell us, I mean, we're getting to this point here too, that I want to know about this organization that you're with. It's, you have it in your I guess, email address, and it's the great, it's actually the pump, you call it, the pump org. And could you tell us a little bit about that organization and not only your travels, but also what you're doing with this organization, Stephen?
Well, it's the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation, and the website is thepump.org. So that's pretty easy to remember. And we're a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to understanding how and why the Great Pyramid was built and to redevelop the ancient technologies, the high technologies associated with the Great Pyramid, right, to help our modern but very troubled world. So that's what we're doing. We are, our base is in southwestern Oregon. We have a facility and doing some on-site experimentations and making some models of various scales and that type of thing. So we are doing quite a bit of research and that type of thing, enough research that it's been compiled into 3 books now. So that's what we're doing.
Now, Stephen, have you guys gotten into a room with other academics as a scientist and tried to work out the differences in your ideas and your thoughts from what you wrote about the pump? Have you met with these other people? And it probably turned into a slight indifference or difference of opinion when you meet these other groups, these scientific groups, that might say, well, it was ET that built it and things like that. Tell us how, if we were a fly on the wall, if you had a meeting like that, Stephen, how did it go?
Well, nowadays we don't all have to meet in a room. You know, we all have email and that type of thing. So, but yeah, there's a lot of networking going on with different people with different ideas. You know, and we try to use valid research methods and legitimate scientific inquiry techniques to analyze each other's assessment of the direct physical evidence. People say, well, do you have any evidence to support your ideas? Yes, I have all the evidence that everybody else has. And, you know, and what differs between different researchers is that their interpretation of evidence. When some Egyptologist says, oh, well, they must have had a big ramp and they drug the stones. Well, I say, well, can you drag a stone that's the largest stone? Can you drag one of those up a ramp? And there's no demonstrations. So Egyptology is one of those very few sciences that does not engage in the scientific method. So there's a lot of other ideas. We analyze even some ideas from the past, like the Great Pyramid had something to do with Bible prophecy, and we analyze if that's a viable interpretation of evidence and all kinds of things. So yeah, there's a lot of brainstorming going on and a lot of progress.
Right. Now you mentioned the Bible. They claim there was high priests that had meetings in underneath the pharaohs. That's the room that they're talking about underneath the great Sphinx halls. And they had the high priest there, and they said Jesus visited those high priests one time in his travels. That kind of tells people that there is something probably there in that room. So the biblical, I guess, words and wisdom point to that, right? I mean, they talk about the ancient Sphinx and the pyramids in the Bible, don't they, Stephen?
Actually, the word pyramid is not in the Bible, or Sphinx is not in the Bible. So,
okay,
those specific words. But some people that are into what they call pyramidology, they pick out Bible verses. And they think that that relates to the Great Pyramid, its dimensions and size and angles. And they come up with this unit of measure called the pyramid inch, that is supposed to help predict when World War II started, or the birthplace of Jesus and all of that. So there's quite a few correlations that people have come up with, but their validity is certainly under question.
Right. I believe the Bible states that Jesus went to the high priest in Egypt and spoke to them and shared knowledge. And then I guess everything else fell in line, like you said. Then they probably put in the word pyramid, and they put in the great Sphinx and things of that nature into the story. But I think the Bible just says that in his travels, he met with the high priests of Egypt. I'm trying to put a disclaimer in there that I'm not saying that it was in there. And you corrected that statement that the pyramid and the great Sphinx was not in the Bible, but the visit to the high priest, you could agree to that he did, right, Stephen?
Well, the Bible says that Jesus and his family went into exile into Egypt, but it doesn't say very much explicitly what they did in Egypt. So I don't know if they made it all the way to Cairo and saw the pyramids or not. So it's hard to speculate what exactly happened way back when.
Yeah, that's part of the conspiracy theories that everybody has to kind of rumble through and look at what's actually going on. Your book, Pharaoh's Pump Analyzed, you're saying that this pump actually was used to create energy, Stephen?
Yeah, I am. That the Great Pyramid was a power plant by being a water pump, that it was a self-contained water pumping system, and the pump water had many purposes. It served to certainly irrigate above the floodplain, but also to power heavy machinery or to power air compressors, if you will. And there's a lot of scientific things you can do with compressed air and that type of thing. I see the Giza Plateau as more of a science center or industrial park than some sort of a funeral related, area. So that's where the high information was manifest into machinery and devices to use the pumped water.
Right. I guess at the top, the very top, they had a dome on it, and it was a triangular, of course, and it was white porcelain. They had it porcelain. That could have been where the energy was discharged. Was that kind of a Tesla idea of transporting energy through air? And did it go to the other pyramids, like in Central America and Mexico and even in India? Did it travel through the air like that, Stephen? Is that where the energy was going?
Some people think so. I think that it did not. There's no evidence that the Great Pyramid ever did have a capstone, and there's no evidence what the capstone, if it existed, was made of. So or any type of explanation of how the capstone would transmit some sort of energy. So I think that the energy that they used with the Great Pyramid water pump was the pumped water. So look at it this way. A hydroelectric dam dams a river, and it causes the water behind it to fill up and make a big lake. Mm-hmm. Well, that's elevated water, and they use that elevated water in a hydroelectric dam to do one thing. It makes electrons in a wire move.
Right.
Well, we in our civilization use that in a whole host of ways, run our computers, our lights, power our electric cars and do everything else. Well, the Great Pyramid, I think, was infrastructure that did one thing and one thing only, and that is pump water. And the output was the King's Chamber vents, the upper ends. And the original builders, who were geniuses, were able to use that pumped water to do a whole host of things that allowed them to gain prosperity, to do scientific experiments, to irrigate their crops. So I also don't think Tesla, now this will be controversial,
Okay.
But Tesla never talked about pyramids. He never wrote a word, the word pyramid, down in any of his writings. Right. There's no reference of him having a lecture saying the word pyramid, and pyramid is not in any of his patents. I think the idea that Tesla was interested in pyramids is a modern day myth that has no substantiation in any type of evidence.
Right. Yeah, I don't think they actually passed that on. But how about, they say these obelisks that stand in Egypt and also stand around the world. Even Washington, D.C. has one. London has one. These pointed objects that stand, I don't know how many stories, maybe 10 stories high. And they say that the Great Pyramid and other pyramids were transmitting energy to those obelisks, and then people could use that energy. How's that theory? Does that work with your thinking, Stephen?
They say that, but that's as far as it goes. They don't say how it was done. They don't recreate how it was done. They don't reduce anybody's electric bill using that type of energy.
Right.
So, you know, how a large, tall stone obelisk, excuse me, I had a cold a couple of days ago. I'm getting over it.
Oh, okay. You don't have that.
But how did it,
30 days.
How did a tall, strong obelisk receive or send energy? And, you know, you ask these technical questions, and I have a very technical background. You ask those questions, and the people that are proponents of that idea have no coherent answer. So my books talk in detail about how the Great Pyramid operated as a water pump, but it's just, you can't get past the idea that the obelisk sent or received energy. You can't get past that superficial sentence into like, well, how was it done? And there's no explanation.
Right. Well, they're saying the obelisk, they were made of granite, and it was quartz. Quartz was all inside granite. And the quartz actually was the conduit for the energy. And the scientists have that, you know, in talking about that. But again, they haven't proven anything, like you said. And we hear all these different theories about Egypt, and we all wonder what's going on. I want to ask you about the Egyptian people. You said they were intelligent. I think they were too. They were taught by somebody, and we don't know, ETs or whatever, passed down generation to generation. But they claim, like, back in, I guess, 2500 BC, Isis and Thoth and these people that were running the country at the time, they had these elongated heads. Now, that's where the scientists are jumping in and saying, well, these were aliens or hybrids. What is your idea, your thought about these people having these elongated heads, Stephen?
Some of the hieroglyphs in Egypt look like their heads are elongated. You know, they go way back, you know, cone heads, if you will.
Right.
And it's certainly fascinating. A lot of skulls have been found in South America with very unusual shapes. So that's, you know, that's a mystery. It's hard to say.
It plays into.
I'm not an anthropologist or a biologist.
Right.
To analyze those skulls, but it is something that certainly needs to be researched as much as possible.
Right, and that's where a lot of these investigators and even some scientists, not all scientists, because scientists try not to put ET into the mix of things when it comes to knowledge and intelligence throughout human history. I guess there's a reason for that. A lot of knowledge is stopped. A lot of intelligence is stopped. And it's like in Egypt, only the high priest and the selected people of the king and queen had knowledge of building these pyramids, and everybody else were just, they worked labor. Is that right? They were holding back the secrets, Stephen.
Well, people are people no matter what. And there's always an elite class in every civilization. Certainly that's true now and in ancient Egypt, and every civilization, every kingdom has their secrets. But I think when the Great Pyramid was built, it was common knowledge of how it was built. The people who built it understood what they were doing. And the people that watched it being built, watched it rise up to the sky, they understood what was going on. Mm-hmm. So it is the honor and duty of modern day researchers to try to understand what was common knowledge when the Great Pyramid was built.
Well, also, we've heard that these people that were building, the technicians, the top architects, stone cutters, they were all highly trained professionals, and they weren't slaves. They did not use slaves to build the pyramids. Is that what your thoughts are too, Stephen?
Well, actually, the citizenship status of the workers is not as interesting to me as what they did. But yeah. But they're probably not slaves. They were probably highly paid workers, just like people that built the hydroelectric dams or large bridges. Mm-hmm. You know, they're professionals and competent at what they're doing, and they get paid for their work, but probably not slaves.
Right. Now, for those people who have the idea that the extraterrestrials were responsible for training all these people in ancient Egypt and other cultures, how could you explain that and tell people that your thoughts and your investigation takes you to another direction, like the people were already intelligent and they knew this already? Stephen, can you argue those two points?
Yeah, well, you know, what do you think it would take to build the Great Pyramid? You know, you would need, a guy that understands water locks. You would need someone that could chemically create a very strong bonding agent, and not much more than that. So Nikola Tesla, he figured out alternating current and all that goes with that in one day. So, it's I don't see how it's impossible that ancient people could not build the Great Pyramid. But here's a thought. People that believe that it had to have some alien influence, if you believe that, you have to believe that ancient people were incapable of building the Great Pyramid. And when you point that out to people, those are two sides of the same coin. If it took aliens, well, then the ancient people were too stupid to build the Great Pyramid. And they say, oh, no. And then they start backpedaling. So I just actually focus more on how it was built instead of who built it. But if you think it required ancient aliens, which I'm not saying they weren't ancient aliens, but if it required ancient aliens, then that meant humans were incapable of building that big pile of rocks.
Well, like you said earlier, in a culture, you have the elites, and you have the academics, the highly skilled, trained people. Then you have the worker bees and the people who do other jobs. And it's their own interest or whatever. Each society has different workers for different things, and people settle into different careers. But how do you explain, and here's something, too, that I see on Ancient Aliens quite a bit and other shows, how do you explain that pyramids were built all around the world? And was that a global thing that they all knew? And that's what they did it for? Why did they build pyramids in Mexico and Central America and India? Why were those built? And how did those people know all this information, Stephen?
There are pyramids all around the world, including China, and Las Vegas even has a pyramid. It's not ancient, but all these pyramids that you talk about in Mexico, they're all different sizes. They have different qualities of construction. Some are just made out of rubble, if you will. Right. And they have different angles on the sides. Some have a platform on top, different interiors. So, excuse me, sorry.
Well, that's a 30-day cough that's going around.
Yeah, but you can't group them all together and say there's a magic bullet. They all have the same purpose. They all were, used for the same thing, built the same way.
Right.
Because moving rubble or gravel even is a lot different than moving a 70-ton stone. So It's hard to group them all together, but if you just have stone or masonry or rubble, and if you want to build a tall building, it has to be big at the bottom and small at the top. That's just an engineering challenge that that anyone would understand. You know, if you want to make a sandcastle, it's bigger at the bottom and smaller at the top. So it's just an engineering challenge that people faced when they wanted to build a tall building without I-beams and structural steel. So that's what I think. You know, you can't build it any other way.
Right. Now, do you agree with the planetary alignment on all these pyramid sites, like in Egypt, Central America, and Mexico? Were the pyramids were aligned with certain star clusters like Pleiades and Sagittarius and places like that? Do you agree that they did align to these planets and they were always north and south oriented? Is that what your findings are, Stephen?
This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty large black bags.
Well, my findings are that the Great Pyramid was not intentionally designed to align to any star. So I think that that is the Orion correlation theory. And I think that that theory is based on some very flawed research, some correlations without causation, some circular reasoning, and some other fundamental problems that makes that theory in crisis. So I think that that's a flawed theory, just like the biblical correlation theory, that people come up with these correlations and then but don't have any causation and that type of thing. So they also, the Orion correlation theory, thinks that math validates a correlation, and in the realm of legitimate academic research, math does not validate a correlation. Mm-hmm. And they also think that precision validates a correlation, like the stars precisely pointed to or the vents pointed to stars. That doesn't validate a correlation at all. So it's that theory, again, is in crisis, because it has some very crumbling foundation of flawed research methods. On my YouTube channel, I have a number of videos that describe that information in much greater detail.
All right. Well,
do you think math validates a correlation?
I have never been a scientist in that area. So you're the expert on that. I'm going to take your word for it. But how about the north and south orientation?
Piece of evidence. The sides of the Great Pyramid are aligned to the cardinal directions. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's evidence. The interpretation of that evidence is much something else. People put a lot of lip service into that alignment, but how is that significant?
Right.
Nobody provides a real answer.
And, you know, your theory, I thought 2-3 years ago, of course, I had the ET theory. I still had that theory in the bucket. But what I'm thinking is that your theory of how everything went on is getting closer, you know, to actually being a realization, because what we're told about history is not what really history is all about. So there could be a lot of different explanations for everything that's happened in our human history. And they say it goes back 260 million years ago at our human history, and it started and stopped 16 times. It's some of the, you know, investigations I've heard that talked about our DNA. But ancient intelligence, a lot of them were smarter than we were, and they had things that Why did they die young, though? A lot of these ancient people died young. If they had that much technology and knowledge, why did a lot of these people die like in their 20s and 30s, and they died of diseases and abscessed teeth and things of that nature? They didn't have the medical knowledge, Stephen. So where did all the knowledge go with, for that?
Well, just to get back to the idea of the alignment of the Great Pyramid, people say, well, if it's just a water pump, why would they align the sides to the cardinal directions? Well, the reason why is because it's a water pump. The alignment of the Great Pyramid doesn't matter at all. Mm-hmm. You know, just like the alignment of the water pump in your car engine. It doesn't matter if it's pointing north, south, east, or west. So the builders, because the alignment didn't matter at all, they just built it square to the world, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, just like my house is built in perfect alignment to my neighbor's house. I live in a subdivision, and my house is perfectly aligned to the sidewalk in front of my house, but there's no religious significance to that alignment. There's no symbolic religion significance. So just because something happens to be in alignment doesn't mean that it was like some profound correlation of anything. It just means that the sides of the Great Pyramid happened to be aligned to the cardinal directions, because the alignment didn't matter at all, just like the alignment of my house doesn't matter. So they just put it square to the lot, if you will, or square to the sidewalk.
Yeah, like my like my brother would say, it is what it is. You know, something like
that. It definitely is what it is, but as researchers, we're trying to find out why it is what it is.
Right. And I was talking about the culture of Egypt. Why didn't they spread that knowledge out to help their health and things of that nature if they were that super intelligent? And even kings and queens actually died, you know, Tutankhamun, you know, died early and young. And why didn't they have the intelligence and knowledge to take care of their own people if they could build these huge monuments? Stephen, can you kind of talk about that?
Well, just like you, I'm a catastrophist. The history of the human race has been punctuated by some catastrophes. But if the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx were built much older than what Egyptologists say, they have nothing to do with Tutankhamun. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Tutankhamun was probably much later than right. when the Great Pyramid was built. Mm-hmm. So, but Tutankhamun was just like the Habsburgs in Europe, and that they intermarried to consolidate their control and ultimately had quite a bit of deformities and that type of thing. King Tut had some deformities with his ankle and some other things, and the Habsburgs, when they intermarried, it kept all the money in the family, and it worked good for a while. But after a few generations, it, I think, led to their demise. So it's just human nature, if you will, that sometimes these dynasties or kingdoms do things that are ultimately don't work out, if you will. So that's what I think happened to both King Tut and also the Habsburgs.
Right. Now, your organization, the Pump Organization, how many people do you have in it, and what are the different levels of expertise, Stephen?
Well, we have a number of people. I'm the president and kind of the mouthpiece, if you will. Mm-hmm. And we have other people. We have, you know, pro bono legal counsel. We have advisors. We have a library with a lot of published and unpublished materials. That type of thing. We have a shop, a facility with some tooling in it, a lathe, and you know, that type of stuff. We even have a 3D printer now, so that's kind of fun to fiddle around with that and do some research. We have a number of other people, you know, that are not on the board of directors. We got one guy, he's a welder, and he's much more valuable than an Egyptologist would ever be. So he comes over and we, you know, work on stuff, and some other people involved that are local. But of course, You know, we network with a bunch of other people, other authors, researchers, interested parties, enthusiasts, that type of thing. You know, I have a Facebook page and a YouTube channel. So there's a lot of ways to get involved, if you will, you know, either by being in the, you know, in the Facebook page or commenting on YouTube videos or being involved with the organization through the website.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned your trip to Egypt. Are you planning another trip, number one? And number two, do you have people on the ground there that gives you updated information from time to time, Stephen?
We do. We do have a few people, some fans and enthusiasts that tell us what's going on and that type of thing. I don't have any trips scheduled right now, believe it or not. So if you're a tour guide and, you know, need help with your tour, let me know. But it honestly takes a lot out of a person, a lot of work to.
Yeah. Hawi Sawas.
To organize a tour.
Yeah. Hawi Sawas was the Secretary of Antiquities in Egypt, and he was in control, and he was pretty tight-lipped. And when somebody mentioned ET, intelligence built those pyramids, he'd run them out of the country. Is that true? I mean, he come on point, didn't he, Stephen?
Yeah, he was known for getting triggered and blowing his top and not playing well with others. If you will, he had a, you know, a famous blow up with Graham, you know,
Ancient Aliens,
Ancient yeah. Aliens, Graham guy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was, you know, to that one happened to be televised, but yeah, they say the company line, if you will, Egyptologists, and it has become a stagnated science, if you want to call it that. I call Egyptology a mystery religion, if you will, because they don't engage in the scientific method. It's stagnated, and it is based on a lot of assumptions that are unprovable, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, Zuhi Hawass was one of the, I think, the biggest hindrances to understanding ancient Egypt.
I heard there were some scientists went there and started talking about ETs, and he actually pointed his finger. He said, "Get back in your cars and get out of here." You know, so yeah, I heard that he had
that makes sense. Yeah, so he, you know, he's a ramp guy, the big ramp, and just the. Whatever the traditional Egyptologists say, you know, the construction of the pyramids, we're in this order and that. So it's all under scholarly debate. We're in a revolution of ideas right now, and a lot of the old ideas are falling away because they're unsupportable, and new, fresher ideas are coming to the forefront.
Right. So Sawas, he had pride with his people. He said the Egyptians built it. Period. He said, our people build it. So he has that pride that is stopping him from, I guess, investigating any further, and who could have helped. Okay, let's get to this other last point. On your book, Pharaoh's Pump Analyzed, examining the research of Edward J. Kunkel. Who was Edward J. Kunkel, Stephen? And tell us a little bit about your book in the last few minutes here.
Edward J. Kunkel was a researcher and visionary, I think, who was the first person to say that the Great Pyramid was a machine, that it actually functioned as infrastructure, and the idea that it was built using water locks and barges, and that it was a water pump, that it was a machine that had a huge tangible return on investment. And he wrote a book called Pharaoh's Pump. I don't have it right in front of me, a copy of it, originally published in 1962. But it had several editions. I think the last one was 79, I believe, 1979. And anyway, my third book, Pharaoh's Pump Analyzed,
right,
is essentially an analysis of his research. And it also, my book describes how this direction of research has advanced. It's a little more technical than my other two books. So, and it's quite a bit longer. It's just in ebook format.
Right.
So, if it was in soft cover, it'd be too expensive, if you will. So it's just in as an ebook. As my other two books, they're in soft cover or Kindle ebook format. So, but it describes probably in greater detail the operation of the Great Pyramid water pump. And while it analyzes Edward Kunkel's research, so there's been a lot of advancement since, 60 years. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a pretty good book and a lot of information in it.
Okay, where could we find your books, Stephen, and also the organization, the Pump organization?
Thepump.org is the website for our nonprofit foundation. And you can go there and find out what we're about, our activities. And, you can email us to find out any information you want or questions you have. So, and then we have links from thepump.org to my YouTube channel with a whole bunch of stuff on it. And also your Facebook page that we have some fun on, if you will. Talk, to make myself available and, talk to the general public, if you will. So we do all that. And the books, they're available through Amazon. And the first two are Kindle ebooks or soft cover. And the third book is just a Kindle ebook. And that's what most people go with now. You can read it instantly on your phone or.
Right.
Whatever. So,
right. I'm a book writer, so I'm going to take that in consideration. So, I want to thank you, Stephen. Our time is up. We agreed to an hour. So, actually, that hour went by so fast. All these shows go by so fast, and I have more I could talk to you about. And I know you have more you can tell us about. Maybe we'll bring you back again. You've been here before, so you'll be back again, buddy. I always like talking to you, and we always have a good show together, and I appreciate it. You've been listening to Dave Emmons and Strange Reality.
Thank you.
It's Stephen Meyer, a gracious guest and a knowledgeable guest, and also he presents the side of things that people don't realize, and maybe we need to open up our minds and take a look at things more fully. Thank you very much, Stephen, and thank you, people, for listening. I like it when I get the comments and stuff, and I'm sure the guests like that too, so they can see what's going on with what they're saying. Thank you, Stephen Meyer, and thank you to the public, and thank you, everybody.